squad cars. The story you're about to hear is true. Details are supplied from the official case files by the South African police. Only names and places have been changed to protect innocent people involved.
Johannesburg, October the 17th, 1 a.m. It's a warm night. Some 80 feet below ground level in the air-conditioned atmosphere of a large shopping center's lower floor, two men extract a packet of cigarettes from an automatic vending machine and walk slowly towards the fountain area. They glance casually in the shop windows, but their eyes see very little. They do not really need the cigarettes. Their minds are elsewhere. They're killing time, keeping fastidiously to a prearranged plan. It is almost time for them to collect their car from floor B of the parking garage and proceed to Troyville. Almost, but not quite.
Nearly time to go. The Glavins is over.
It won't take long. An hour or so at the very most. If we're not out by then it means we've hit a snag.
Is there anything we haven't covered? Anything that's likely to crop up?
No, I don't think so. We couldn't have been more thorough.
Want a fag, Benny?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. I just hope we've got all the facts right. I'd hate to be going through all this for nothing. You make the time.
It's just after one. Time we're on the move if we're still going in at 20 past.
Of course we are. There's no reason to change anything at all. Did you test the oxyacetylene gear before you put it in the boot?
Yeah, working fine. If we do mess this one up, we certainly can't blame the equipment. All the stuff we got's first class.
How many times have I got to tell you? We're not going to mess it up. I wish you'd stop thinking that way.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's just this waiting gets on my nerves. I'll be all right once we get going.
I know you will. You need something to occupy your mind. Something like a nice, big, fat, juicy safe. And you know what, Harry? In just a few minutes, you're going to get one.
...10 a.m. Harry Briggs and Benny Fisher leave their motor car parked in a side alley just off Fuerhout Road and break into a clothing company's warehouse. They act smoothly, methodically, calmly, and efficiently. The security man, who is reading a magazine, hears nothing and is completely surprised when he is suddenly attacked.
Just sit quietly and he won't get out.
Hey, how did you get in here?
That's our business. All we want you to do is behave.
We'll see about that.
Look out, he's got a gun.
You don't.
Okay, I've got him. Hold him there. Perfect.
All right, he's out. You tie him up and put the gag on. I'll get the oxy. I won't be long.
Okay, but be quick. We don't want to get behind schedule.
Briggs moves the oxyacetylene equipment into the warehouse whilst Fisher ties up the night watchman. Then they go into the office and begin to work on the safe by lining the top and bottom and both sides with explosives. At 1:45 a.m., their preparations are complete.
That's it. All ready to go, touch wood.
Is the detonator all set?
Everything's all set. We can get over there behind those crates. They'll shield us from the blast.
All right. Well, let's get it over with. We've still got a lot of work to do.
Ready?
Yeah. Ready when you are.
Right.
What a shambles. Still, it was a perfect job. Not too little and not too much.
Now for the next phase. Yeah, hand me the goggles.
Yeah?
So. Okay, switch her on and mind your eyes.
Right.
Right. Won't be long now, baby. It won't be long now.
At 2:45 a.m., the two men emerge from the building, make their way to their car, and drive away. The night watchman hears them go and renews his struggle with the ropes that are holding him fast. It takes him a further half an hour's wriggling to loosen the bonds tying his arms. He removes the gag and rushes to the telephone. At Radio Police Headquarters, Constable Newman is on duty when the telephone rings.
Police? Constable Newman speaking.
There's been a robbery. I was tied up and gagged, and they blew the safe out of the wall about an hour ago. I don't know how much was in there, but it was a heck of a lot, I know that.
Just a minute, please. Who are you? Where are you phoning from, and who was robbed?
Yes, I'm sorry. My name's Murray. I'm night security officer for the Classic Coding Company. We look after their warehouse in Fulhope Road, Troyville.
Is that where you're phoning from?
Yes, that's right. And they broke in here about 1:30. I've only just managed to get free.
Are you hurt?
No, I'm all right. Just a bit of a headache.
We'll send someone around immediately. Whereabouts in Fourhout Road is this warehouse?
Down at the bottom, next to the timber yard.
Oh, yes. All right, Mr. Money. We'll have someone with you in a matter of minutes.
A.M. Lieutenant Don Brenton and Detective Sergeant Hayes arrive at the warehouse and open investigations. Whilst the security officer is making a quick check of the rest of the building, the two policemen examine the safe that has been blown out of the wall and cut open with the oxyacetylene equipment.
Well, they certainly didn't take any chances, sir. It would take quite a safe to keep them out.
Neatest job I've seen in years. This is a clever outfit, Sergeant. If the front looks too tough, you go in the back of the safe.
And to get to the back, they blew the safe out of the wall.
Yes, you've got to hand it to them. It's a first-class job.
Have you ever seen one like this before, sir?
No, I haven't. Nothing as neat as this.
So it'll be no good checking records with a view of similar methods.
Oh, I don't know. We'll have to examine each phase of the job. We'll just have to see.
I wonder how much they got away with.
The manager will be able to tell us that. Call him in, please, Sergeant. Yes.
Mr. Phillips, would you come in, please?
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. I got here as quickly as I could.
Sorry to drag you out like this, Mr. Phillips, but you're the only man who can tell us what they got away with.
I can tell you fairly accurately. About 35,000 rand.
Why so much? It's not the end of the month.
No, but it's Friday, Bantu wages.
To the tune of 35,000 rand?
No. That figure includes receipts from salesmen for the week. And this is the time of the month we pay their commission.
I see.
There's actually more money in the safe at this time than at the end of the month. So whoever did this was well acquainted with the way we do things here.
Yes, the information must have come from some member of the staff. But this job was pulled by experts. Look at it.
Incredible. It's a miracle the roof didn't fall in.
No miracle, Mr. Phillips. This operation was planned to the last degree. Exactly the right charges were used to do what they had in mind. As you say, the roof would have come in if they'd used a bigger charge. But they used exactly the right amount.
I'd hate to have been in here when they did it.
How does this affect the company? Are you insured against theft?
Oh, yes, there's no worry there. The insurance company won't like it very much, though. How's Murray?
Oh, he was very lucky. Got away with just a headache.
Good. I'm glad they didn't hurt him badly. He's been with the company for years. And not a young man anymore. Where is he, by the way?
He's checking the rest of the warehouse.
Have you informed the managing director?
No. You were our prime concern. You're the one with the keys and the knowledge of how much the safe contained. We figured you could inform all the other interested parties.
I'd better get on with it. Mr. Ward isn't going to be at all pleased.
Just a minute, Mr. Phillips, before you go.
Yes?
Haven't you got a burglar alarm?
Yes, of course.
Gets more and more interesting. All right, Mr. Phillips. Well, Sergeant, let's go and take a look at where they got in.
The two detectives carefully examine the building, and eventually they discover the break-in point. Brenton carefully examines the broken window.
Yes, Sergeant, this case has every hallmark of a master criminal. Just look at this. They taped the glass with sticking plaster before they broke it. Doesn't make a noise, see? Doesn't involve touching any of the burglar alarm wires.
Simple, but effective, eh?
Very. Now, having taken the glass out of the lavatory window with no noise, they're then free to work on the alarm wire. They short-circuit it to the window frame with clamps, and then cut the middle section of the alarm wire out. That leaves a space big enough for a small man, or a youngster perhaps, to get through. And presumably, he then went and opened that side door for the others and all the equipment.
Yeah, the night watchman, sir?
Well, I should think he was next in line for attention. They fixed him so that he couldn't hear anything on his rounds, and then they got on with what they came to do. They drill the wall in four places, see, to take the charge of dynamite. Blow the safe out so that the back's exposed. And then they calmly cut it open. Yes, neat as a pin.
Must have had all the confidence in the world, sir.
Anyway, let's get cracking. You get the fingerprint people to check the area, will you?
Right, sir.
It's my guess they worked in gloves, so don't waste your time on the obvious things.
Right, sir.
And look out for cigarette ends. They can be very useful sometimes. I'm going to talk to the night watchman.
Whilst Detective Sergeant Hayes and members of the fingerprint department examine the area for clues, Lieutenant Brenton walks back into the warehouse and questions the night security officer, Charlie Murray.
So you didn't really have much of a chance to look at them then?
No, sir, no. It all happened very quickly. And, you know, they was wearing hats with handkerchiefs covering up their faces.
Any impressions of height or weight?
Nothing outstanding, sir. Seemed pretty average to me. Sure you can't be of any more help to you, but... Well, I didn't really get much chance. I did my best against them, but it was too strong for me.
No, don't worry, Charlie. I'm sure you did what you could.
Yeah, I don't know where their footprints are any good to you people, but there's two or three over by that packing case. Look, I'll show you. Of course, I don't know. You may want one of them. Could be by anybody, I suppose, but... Yeah, they did come from that direction. And they show up pretty clearly in the dust there, as you can see.
Yes, they do. Yes, quite distinctive, too. Well done, Charlie. As you say, they may not come to anything, but we'll look into it anyway. And do me a favor, will you? See that nobody touches or disturbs them till I get back. They could be very important.
Lieutenant Brenton finishes questioning the night watchman, Charlie Murray, and goes into the office where the safe has been blown from the wall. Detective Sergeant Hayes, who has finished investigations outside, is already hard at work in there.
Sir, how are you getting on, Sergeant?
We found some fingerprints on the cistern, sir, but we won't know whether they're of any value until we fingerprint the staff after their arrival.
That's a good lead. Worth following.
And you, sir? Was the watchman any help?
Well, there were two of them, probably youngsters. There's a couple of sets of footprints in the dust. They're worth a picture and a plaster cast.
Right, sir.
Now, let's have a look at that safe. Yes, hole in the back, big enough to provide access to the shelves. They must know this make of safe. Would you know where to make a hole like this?
No, sir.
So it looks as though they've done it before.
Mr. Ward should be here very soon now.
Mr. Phillips, how many people work in the admin department?
There are 15 of us.
Have they all been here a long time?
Well, most of them have. Two girls joined us in the last 6 months, but we always have quite a large turnover.
Have you fired anyone recently?
No. We're usually quite lucky with our staff.
Well, I shall want to talk to each member after they arrive for work, and they'll be fingerprinted.
What on earth for?
Oh, it's a matter of routine, and for use as reference.
Oh, I see. It's not that you think any member of the staff did it.
Oh, I'd be very surprised if they did, but stranger things have happened. It's not entirely beyond the realms of possibility for you to have a safe cracker on your staff.
The footprints that Lieutenant Brenton came across in the warehouse of the Classic Clothing Company are both photographed and cast in plaster of Paris. The photographs and the casts are immediately dispatched to the South African Bureau of Standards branch for identification. At 8:30 a.m., the fingerprint staff proceed with the fingerprinting of the staff members who may have access to the washroom near the administrative offices. None of the impressions they take match the ones already discovered.
How are you getting on, Sergeant?
Oh, not very well, sir. Haven't come up with anything yet.
Well, I might be onto something. I've been going through the section of records where details are kept of known safecrackers. I've been particularly interested in details of how some of these boys work. Now, there's only one man in the whole of the Republic whose speciality is blowing safes out of the wall.
And who's that, sir?
A man called Skinny Nichols. He happens to live in Johannesburg. Here's his file.
Seems pretty thick, sir.
Well, it has to be with all the jobs he's pulled in his time.
Ah, yes, I see. It's quite a record, sir.
It certainly is, Sergeant.
Hey, have you seen this, sir?
What?
He got the indeterminate sentence for his last job, so he's still inside.
Oh, not Skinny. He'll get time off for good behavior. I'd say that it's odds on that he's a free man again by now. Yes, I think it might pay us to go up to the jail and find out a little bit more about Mr. Nichols. If he has been released already, we can find out where he's likely to be.
The two policemen go to the prison, but learn that Nichols has been released just 8 months ago. He is supposed to report to the station every Monday morning, and a swift check reveals that he has never missed yet. Brenton and Hayes obtain his current address and go to see him, in the hope that he may provide a shortcut to the solution of the warehouse robbery.
Do you know this Nichols character, sir? Ever come across him before?
No, not at all. I only know what I read in his file. Captain Sasaki seems to have had quite a lot to do with him in the past, but he's on leave at the moment. Otherwise, we could have spoken to him about it.
Do you really think that he might be the man we're after, sir?
I don't know, but he's our only practical lead at the moment. The job was definitely done by his methods. There is one thing that worries me, though.
What's that, sir?
His size. Murray said that the two men were of medium height and weight. Now, judging by the size of that lavatory window they came through, I should think they were slightly under average.
Well, what's wrong with that, sir? They call him Skinny. I should think that fits in very well.
You don't know him, Sergeant. They call him Skinny for the same reason they call short people lofty. He weighs about 300 pounds. Look at this photo.
Yes, I see what you mean. Equally well, I've called him Fatty.
Exactly. Oh, well, we may learn something. What's the address?
81 4th Street, Brixton. Should be just up here on the left. And there's third. Now, this must be it.
93, 91, 89. That'll be it. There, with the round front door. Place looks as if it's just been painted, so he can't be too hard up. Good afternoon. Mr. Nichols?
Yes, sir. What can I do for you, gentlemen? It's a long time since I've had a visit from the law.
We'd like to have a few words with you, if you can spare us the time.
I should think so. I have no pressing engagements at the moment. Won't you come inside?
Thank you.
Come to this way. You'll have to excuse the mess, but we've been having a bit of a clean-up. Usually around at this time of the year. Not that I'm always here, of course. I spend quite a lot of time away. On business, you might say.
Quite. And we happen to know where you've been doing your business for the past few years.
I do. Well, that's in the past now. I've done my time. I've learned my lesson.
I'm pleased to hear it. And surprised as well. You've been given the same lesson several times in your life, but it's never sunk in before.
Well, it has this time. Anyway, what do you want? You haven't come here just to make me feel uncomfortable.
No, we haven't. We'd like to know where you were last night.
Last night? What time?
Well, let's say between midnight and 2 a.m. Where were you then, Skinny?
Well, now, I could say I was in bed. Well, that would be a perfectly reasonable place to be at that time of night. On the other hand, it wouldn't be true. And if you happened to find that out, it would automatically put me on the wrong side, wouldn't it? It so happens that I was playing cards. A poker, if you must know.
Sergeant.
Ian Petty, Pete Ace, Nigel Bullock, Derek Starkey, Alan Bulston, and George White.
Is that the lot?
How many do you want? You can't have any more. With me, that makes seven, a full school.
And they'll all vouch for you, I suppose.
Well, of course they will. And they're not all ex-cons, you know. Hey, Derek Starkey is an estate agent. Nigel Bullock's an accountant. Both respectable men.
All right. But we'll check.
Oh, I'm sure you will. I wouldn't expect otherwise. Well, I suppose someone's pulled a job, and I am in line to be nailed for it. Am I right?
No, we don't want to nail anybody for anything they haven't done. If your alibi checks out, you've got nothing to worry about.
So why did you come to me? What made you suspect me in the first place?
The way the job was done bore a marked similarity to the way you operate.
Used to operate.
I beg your pardon. Used to operate. If you're innocent, then I apologize for taking up so much of your time.
Not at all, Lieutenant. It's been a pleasure. Come around again, any time.
We might do just that, Skinny. You never know.
The two detectives leave Nichols' house and drive to the branch of the South African Bureau of Standards, where they collect the report on the photographs and plaster casts of the footprints. They reach the conclusion that the report will not help them to catch the criminals, although it may help to secure a conviction once the arrest has been made.
Well, what do you suggest we do now, sir?
I think it's time that we checked on Skinny Nichols' alibi. He may have been lying, although I doubt it. He's too old a hand to feed us a load of rubbish. You know that it doesn't pay in the long run. Well, come on, Sergeant, let's get started.
Brenton and Hayes spend the rest of the afternoon and most of the following morning visiting the names that were given to them by Nichols.
I see, sir, and you're perfectly prepared to swear that Nichols was still at the poker game when you left him.
I'm sorry to bother you, sir, but I wonder if you could spare a moment. We're trying to check on the statement.
Yes, sir, that's quite correct. It would help us a great deal if you could either confirm or deny.
We've covered them all now, haven't we, sir?
Not yet, Sergeant. Still one more to go, and he may provide the lead we're looking for.
By midday on the 18th of November, Nichols' alibi is found to be completely watertight, but Lieutenant Brenton is still not satisfied. He orders a 24-hour watch to be kept on Nichols in the hope that something may turn up.
No report from the fingerprint department, Sergeant?
No, sir, nothing at all. The owners must be clean.
I'm certain that Nichols is involved in some way. He was much too ready for us. Had his answers a little bit too pat for my liking.
But his alibi was backed up by all six men. And some of them were pretty respectable, as he said.
Yes, I know. And that's another thing. It's too convenient. A perfect alibi just when he needed one.
Excuse me, Lieutenant. A message from control. Car 19 reports that Nichols has gone out to a caravan at Meerdale. There appears to be two other men there.
Come on, Sergeant. This could be it.
I couldn't live in one of these things. Send me scatty.
Well, it's better than a cell. Or didn't you think of that?
Don't get funny with me, boy. Now, what's all the rush about?
We want to move on. Down to Durban, perhaps.
With the caravan?
Why not? Makes an ideal place to stay and far more private than a hotel room. Are you coming or not?
I can't. The police have been around asking questions.
What?
All right, it's nothing but get alarmed about, only routine. They've got a record, haven't I? They're bound to come to me.
Sir, what are you going to do? Why can't you go away if it was only routine?
It would look suspicious if I suddenly left town. No, you better give me my share and push off. You got the money here?
Yeah, it's in this case. Yeah.
That's quite a sight. We're the only ones who know it's here.
All right, you three, whatever you want. I said keep still. Well, well, the money on the table as well. I won't even have to bother to check your shoes. What are you doing here, Skinny? Just visiting for poker.
At the trial, Harry Briggs and Benny Fisher were each sentenced to 5 years' imprisonment, 2 years of which were suspended. Nichols, who had planned and organized the robbery, was returned to prison to continue his indeterminate sentence. All the money was recovered.
They prowl the empty streets at night, waiting, in fast cars, on foot, living with crime and violence. These men are on duty 24 hours out of every 24. They face dangers at every turn, expecting nothing less. They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of Squad Cars. Listen again next Friday evening to another dramatic story in our authentic South African police series, Squad Cars. Squad Cars is directed by Colin Fish and produced by David Goodman.